thing. Why can't I get a murderer someday? I mean, it's a pretty awful statement, you know, but it's funny. Because we are all the same. And we learn that we're the same. Because when it comes to selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, we've all been there. You know, it's not as if it's a revelation. So that's the big book says those are good reasons. In addition, you'll die if you don't. The rest of, on pages 73 and 74, they tell you how to find someone to give it to. Because if you're alone and there's no AA in your town, because this book was written for people who didn't have AA around, you have to find someone. They say, well, find someone outside of your own acquaintance, a psychologist, a clergy person, a respected person, someone you can tell it to. I should point out that on page 96, once you've recovered yourself and you're ready to sponsor, the big book says, now that you have recovered, let this person know that you're available to make a decision, because the big book says we should take step three with another person, a spiritual advisor or a loved one, if possible, or tell his story, which is step five. Let him know you're available. But if he wants to tell a story to someone else, don't bother about it. Don't mind about it. So you're available. If you are ready to sponsor, you're available to hear it. I have personally found telling this my story, my step five, it works best if I tell it to someone in the program, but not always. And I have sometimes used other people. Mostly I've used OA people. Sometimes I've used AA people. And sometimes I've used people who aren't. I've done step fives with my wife. She's my best friend and understanding. She's not on the list. Sometimes I do it with her. The criteria for someone are right at the bottom of page 74. Begin there. It is important that he be able to keep a confidence, that he fully understand and approve of the driving act, that he will not try to change our plan. Those are the criteria for the person to whom you want to tell your story. I always joke, but as a lawyer, of course, I know how to keep a confidence. I once had a person start her step five with me by giving me a dollar, saying, you know, oh, you're hired. I'm protected now by solicitor-client privilege. She also said to me after something really deep came out right at the end of the step five, she said, I've been holding back on you. I've got something to tell you. She said, after telling me, she said, of course, you realize I have to kill you now. But my biggest, the biggest guarantee I can give to someone of keeping confidence is I have no memory of what someone has told me a week after they told it to me. You know, I have people phoning me and say, remember John? Well, this is what I think I should be doing as an amends. Who the hell is John? You know, who the hell is she? You know, I have a terrible memory. I just awful. I could tell you very embarrassing stories about myself. And I do. When we decide who is to hear our story on page 75, we waste no time. So I'm only going to tell you it's valuable, it's important, and you'll die if you don't. And I'm not going to tell you anymore. Most people feel so much better. I guess I should also say, because this is a recommendation that everyone makes who's worked the steps, don't anticipate. When you get to step three, don't anticipate step four. When you get to step four, don't anticipate step five. When you're doing step four, do step four and don't mind about what you're going to say to that person. Oh, I'll never be able to talk about that. You may not have to. Okay? Or by the time you finish step four, you may want to. But don't worry, especially when you get to four and five, don't think about eight and nine. I'll never be able to make amends to blah, 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 you know. Don't think about that. You're not at that point. The steps are in order for a reason. The big book says not only half measures avails nothing, but they say on page 59, here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. Each step isn't suggested. The 12 steps are suggested as a program. It's not take what you like and leave the rest with this thing. Half measures availed us nothing, the big book says. It's either all or nothing. Either accept the program or you don't accept the program. It's very important. Anyway, so I'm not going to do any more sales job on why you should do a step five. But here are the, when we decide who's to hear our story, we waste no time. Page 75. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. And I do this every time I do a step five. I say, I want you to understand, I need to do this. I want to thank you for hearing me. I'm going to die if I don't do this. Because I believe that. It's true. I will die. If I keep these things in, I'll die. I'll go back to eating, I'll get diabetes, and I'll die. And it won't be a fun death. It won't be the kind of death I used to long for, the quick, sudden, or what he might have been kind of death. You know? It'll be awful. What he was. I mean, I was luckily in the program with my mother, but my grandmother, with whom we lived, and I had a wonderful relationship with her all my life. She helped raise me. She had diabetes, but she had a stroke, and for 4 years of her, the last 4 years of her life were really hard. She lost her ability to read. She got aphasia. Is it aphasia or dyslexia? I don't know what it is, but she couldn't read, and that's all she had because she couldn't walk well, she couldn't hear well, she couldn't see well. So reading for her was much of her life. She was a great reader, and she was very bitter, and she was very, very rough on my mother and rough on my grandfather because of her sadness and bitterness. And I'll tell you, when I joined this program, she had died already. When I joined this program, she was on my resentment list. I couldn't remember the first 22 years of my life, because all I remembered were the last four. You know, and I don't know why I just talked about that, but it had a lot of these steps. Oh, and I held in. That's all I remembered. Once I got rid of my resentment towards her, and I realized how sick she was. Well, she was sick. I mean, I don't even have to sort of imagine that she was sick. She wasn't spiritually, well, she was spiritually, but she was in pain. She was in tremendous pain. Once I did, I remembered the first 22 years. It was such a wonderful, miraculous thing that happened to me. So if I keep it in, I'll die. If I share it, I'll get rid of it. Now, here are the instructions the Big Book gives. They're so detailed. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, period. Those are the instructions. There are no instructions. I mean, it's not much detail. I can only tell you what I do and it seems to work. And I have people who disagree with me, and I have no reason to disagree with them. They do more. But what I do, because this is what I learned, this is how I learned to do it, and it seems to work, is I say to people, take your resentment form and read off column 1 and column 4. Don't go back and relive column 2 or column 3. I just want to, you know, tell me the person, the institution, the principle that bothers you. You may have to tell me, oh, Fred is my brother, or you may have to say Frank is my friend, or Joyce is my wife. I need to know a bit, some context. But once that's the case, now tell me, where have you been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Now, unfortunately for the voyeur in me, and we're all voyeurs, otherwise celebrity magazines would die, for want of subscription, all the good stuff is in column 2. All the interesting stuff, all the stuff that really is fascinating is in that column 2, and you never get to hear it. I mean, I'll never forget hearing one where a friend of mine, a woman said about her husband. And then there was a videotape, but no, it's not about him, it's all about me. Let me tell you where I've been. So it was a videotape? You know, and... You know what I mean? I mean, it's just, if I have someone says, no, I can't tell you about where I've been selfish until I tell you where she was wrong, I know that that person has not been able to put out of his mind the wrongs that others have done. And I may very well say, you know, until you're ready to do a step 5 in which you can tell me only your side, you better do some work on your prayers. You better understand where that person was spiritually sick. You better understand what your side is. But at any rate, I just say column 1 and column 4. I may ask them questions. If it's blank, I may help them fill out the thing, because I've never found a situation where I haven't been able to find selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, every single thing that's listed as a resentment. And then that's that. And then we go on to fears and sex conduct. To save time, I say, I'm going to assume that you said that you relied on your finite self rather than infinite God, that it didn't work, and that you said the fear prayer. What I want to do is hear what your fear is, why you have that fear, and what you think God would have you be after you've said the prayer. And sometimes I say, I don't know what God would have you be. And I work with them based on my own experience, and sometimes it's not my experience. We work together on what would God have you be. But we work on that and we come up with something. And I'll give you more examples as time goes on. When I go to step 10, I'll talk about some of the, like when it comes to step 10, and I'll talk about tomorrow, step 10 is where the really subtle things go on. You've gotten rid of the big stuff in steps 4 through 9. You've recovered. In step 10, you do this process all over again, but now you're dealing with a really difficult sort of life challenges. Do I change my career? What's this relationship like? How do I deal with a coworker or something? How do I deal with this problem? It's really a fascinating exploration. So that's what I do with fear. We work out. Sex conduct, just read across. Did you arouse, where were you selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? And ultimately, where were you at fault? What should you have done instead? And again, some people may need help there, but I'll tell you, my general proposition that at the end, what you should have done is either get out of the relationship or strengthen it. And there usually isn't much of a choice. That's usually what it comes down to. I may be wrong, but I think that's, think more of the other person, or get out of the relationship because of the sickness of the relationship. I mean, I don't think there's much else. And that's usually true for most relationships. Either you invest more into it or you withdraw from it. And that's it. I mean, that's all I ask them to do. I have never found it done this way, even with someone with 160 resentments, to take longer than 4 hours. It's really quite amazing because when you go through the resentments and you've got selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, there's so much ditto, ditto, ditto. There's so much, my mother, my father, same. My six brothers, well, I'll tell you about this brother. Well, the others are the same, too, except this brother, there's a little bit of a difference. I was selfish a little bit more in this respect. My six friends, my 10 teachers, you just go through it and you begin to develop a shorthand because it's pretty obvious there's patterns in your life. And either you're selfish because you wanted things to be different, or you're selfish because you wanted people to like you, or you're selfish because you wanted something for yourself. You're either using people or they were using you. I mean, they're patterns. So it's very short. But there's a very significant passage here. Right after the instructions, pocket our pride, illuminating every dark cloud of the past, comes a checklist of promises. And I'll tell you from my own experience what happened after I read these promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. The rest of the promises here are, we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, but doesn't necessarily come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. The basic promises are you delighted? Can you look the world in the eye? Can you be alone at perfect peace and ease? Have your fears fallen from you? When I first did it this way, the person I was doing it with said, okay, here's the checklist. Are you delighted? Can you look there? And I said, I've never done a step 4 and 5 more powerful than what I just did. I am so astounded by what came out. But I have no idea whether I'm delighted, whether I can look the world in the eye. I'm just stunned. I'm just sort of like, So I said, I'll phone you tomorrow and I'll tell you how I feel. Well, I phoned him the next day and said, no, I'm not delighted. I can't look the world in the eye. I'm not at perfect peace and ease, and my fears have not fallen from me. I feel great, but I don't feel those things. He said, you left something out in step 4. He said, you want me to do it all over again? No, no, no. Build on what you've done. You've already done most of it, but there's something left out. Figure out what it is. Go back and fill out a resentment form. I tell you, I did that 3 more times. Each time it was shorter. The last time it was, why am I filling out this blah, blah, blah form again? That was my resentment. I'll never get it. I'll never succeed. I mean, I came down to simple things like that. But you know what? Finally, I was I could be alone with perfect peace and ease. My fears had fallen from me. I could look the world in the eye, and I was delighted. And it happened. And I don't feel that I wasted any time. It took me about a month and a half. I did the forms probably within about 3 or 4 weeks. I filled out the major ones. I did my step 5. I felt good, but not great. Right? I did it again. I think the last time I did it over the phone, because I didn't have to meet the guy. I said, oh, this is what's been missing, you know. And I finally, you know, I ended up, I didn't have any set conduct forms to fill out at the end. I didn't have any. I'd already dealt with those issues. I really had a few resentments and a few fears that came out as I was peeling the skin off the onion. So that may happen to you, or you may hit it right on the nail on the head right away. I don't know. Didn't have with me. I didn't hit the nail on the head right away, but I got it really far in, you know. But it didn't go all the way in. I had to push a little bit more. But the fact is, this checklist will tell you whether you've done it. Maybe you've done it too quickly, and this checklist will stop you at this point, and you will know whether you've done it too quickly or whether it's happened. You will feel delighted. You will be able to look the world in the eye. You can be alone. You will be able to be alone in perfect peace and ease. Your fears will fall from you. That's the promise. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, now, we haven't finished step 5. We've admitted to another human being, and we've admitted to ourselves the exact nature of our wrongs, but we've not yet admitted to God. Whatever God means, we haven't admitted to God. There's another set of instructions here, which I missed for a long time until this person finally brought it to my attention. Right at page 75, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. So we're ready to review what we've done. We've got all these forms we filled out. Hopefully, if there are things we left out, we've penciled in and written in more than we've discovered during the step 5. There's a prayer. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. God, thank you from the bottom of my heart that I know you better. Truth, justice, love, and beauty. I am so grateful that I understand how close I can be to you, to these concepts. That's the best I can do. You know, I don't have a God that does anything more, so that's what I pray. Taking this book down from our shelf. Now, Blaine, one of my mentor, is a very funny guy, and he's also a big book thumper, and he knows so many literalists. And he jokes at this point that he thought that he could make $1 million selling a big book step 5 shelf from which you can take it down. Right? He says, taking this book down from a shelf. Well, I got to have a shelf to take it down from. So, you know, because big book literalists follow the book. Anyway, taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, page 59 and 60, carefully reading the first 5 proposals, steps 1 through 5. We ask if we have omitted anything. God, have I omitted anything? For we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And by the way, I could hand it out later, pick it up at the end of the day. There's the arch of freedom, and many of you will be familiar with the metaphor of the arch that's built up as we go through the steps. The page references are there, but this is the arch of freedom. We're walking, we've created the foundation, the cornerstone, and the keystone by various steps, and now we're walking through this arch to freedom. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? I've had people try to interpret every single word there. I don't even try. These are metaphors. The whole point is, have we been complete? Now, if we are delighted, if we can look the world in the eye, if we can be alone at perfect peace and ease, and if our fears fall from us, probably, yes, we've been complete. We might find that there's something we haven't told someone. We phone them back, or we meet with them to make sure we've got it. This is all done the same day, right? This is still step 5. We're admitting to ourselves. We've admitted to ourselves in step 4. We've admitted to God. In this part of step 5, we've admitted to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Before we turn the page, I just want to talk about the steps in the wall as opposed to the big book. For years, in my first 6-7 years of relapse, I tried to interpret the steps as written on the wall. And I tried to understand, well, step 5 says the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6 says our defects of character. Step 7 says our shortcomings. There must be a reason. There must be a difference between our wrongs, our defects of character, and our shortcomings. There must be a progression as we go through. I may try to parse it and understand it. And then Joe and Charlie puncture that bubble by saying that, I haven't found it, I don't know where it is, but they quote Bill as saying that when asked about the differences, Bill said, "I was taught never to use the same words in successive sentences. So for variety, I put in defects of, And if you'll notice, the word defects of character is found in step 5, step 6, and step 7. The word shortcomings is not used in step 7. It's defects of character. The word wrongs is not, I don't think it's used in the discussion of step 5. It's defects of character. I think I'm right. At any rate, the big book has a difference. And now comes the real contentious point, at least to some people, and that is the distinction between the big book and other ways of looking, at least my interpretation of the big book, the way I've been taught, and the way I've learned from the history of AA, that 6 and 7 are steps you take the same time right after you've done step 5, and you can answer to your satisfaction that you're delighted, you can look the world in the eye, you can be alone at perfect peace and ease, your fears have fallen from you, the mortar is the foundation, the arch is there, you haven't built it without sand, you haven't used mortar without sand, this is it. Page 76. If we can answer, and also it comes from my knowledge, and this is a fact, that steps 6 and 7 did not exist in the original 6 steps. They were points at which Bill put them in to plug the loopholes. If you read The Language of the Heart, you'll see an essay in there on Bill's creation of the 12 steps. And he'll talk about why he put those in and the other 6 steps. And they were there to plug the loopholes for the person who did not have anyone from AA around. You look at how Dr. Bob did it. "You're a real awful person, aren't you?" "Yes, Dr. Bob." "You want to get rid of those defects of character?" "Yes, Dr. Bob." "Get on your knees." Now that moment of getting on your knees, the moment of preparation for saying, "Yes, I have done these things, I take responsibility for them, I see a way out of them, I'm ready to have them removed," that's what 6 and 7 are all about. But I've got to tell you, if you have 4 defects of character which have absolutely harmed your life, paralyzed you, made you completely incapable of understanding and seeing and feeling the sunlight of the Spirit, you're going to be ready to answer this question. Do you want to get rid of those 4 basic character defects? Especially since in working out the fear and the sex conduct forms, you've seen exactly what you can do to get rid of them. How to act in a way that gets rid of them. I've never met a person who accepts the notion that there are 4 defects of character who has said, "I think I'll hold on to selfishness." And I've got to tell you, our OA 12 and 12, hey, the AA 12 and 12 too, but the OA even more than the OA 12 and 12, in their discussions of steps 6 and 7, certainly can give you the impression that if you're not really, 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 really ready to get rid of all of your defects of character, stay there. And I've watched people relapse because they stayed there. And I don't care what you read, and I don't care whether you do it in a day or it takes you 3 weeks to do step 6. If you linger on step 6 to the point of relapse, something's wrong. Because that's just a thinking section. It's not action. And in step 7, that's not going to get rid of your defects of character. You're just asking God to remove them. You're not imagining that God's suddenly going to go zap and they're removed. You know, when Bill says, "I had this rush of wind," and he had this spiritual experience, he describes that in Bill's story, he says, God comes to most men gradually, but to me he came suddenly. And the whole appendix on spiritual experience is, it takes time for these things to happen. Most often, other people around the person discover that he's changed or he's changed in this thing before he himself realizes he's undergone a psychic change. Your defects of character will be removed, but not as a result of prayer, but as a result of the action of steps 8 and 9. With that in mind, look at the one paragraph devoted to step 6 and the one paragraph devoted to step 7. And you may accept it or not, but I think it's the same day. If we can answer to our satisfaction, have we made mortar without sand, have we omitted anything? We then look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready? Are we willing to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Sure, if you have 50 character defects, you might want to hold on to one or two of them. I don't know why, but you might want to. You know, I mean, I'll be the whole without the donut. You'll find that in the AA 12 and 12. Or how can I be nothing if I give up gossiping? You know, but those are sort of, I think they're minor compared to the depth of selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. I think when you see not only how they have killed you and hurt others, but how there's a way out, you can see it because of the process we've gone through. My own experience is that you will want to give up these defects. Anybody able to answer yes? But anyway, Big Book says, can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Doesn't mean you stop. You just ask God to help you be willing. Okay, when ready, we say something like this. This is a whole discussion of step seven. We say something like this. You might as well say it. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. It's just a prayer, guys. That's all it is. If you think God's going to remove your defects of character by saying a prayer like that without doing anything to deserve having your defects of character, well, good luck. And if you're going to wait around for your defects of character to be taken away from you before you make amends, you'll be waiting a long time. At least that's my guess. I've never experienced that because I go on and make my amends. Six and seven are these moments in time where you're solemnly sort of saying, these are the loopholes that Bill put in. Okay, you shared it. That, remember, Ebby was, you get honest with yourself, that's step four. You're honest with another human being, step five. And then he went on to, you make amends and restitution for the harms you've done. Nothing in between. Well, Bill knew it was important to have that moment with Dr. Bob saying, are you ready, you little, you know, are you ready to have God remove these defects? Yes, Dr. Bob. That moment of saying, yes, I have done harm and I feel as if I should be doing something about it. Yes, I am living a life of paralysis and anger and resentment, which makes it impossible for me to function as a full human being, a grown-up in this world. Yes, these things are killing me, and if I could get rid of them, I would be in the sunlight of the Spirit. I would have a direct connection. I am ready. That's an important moment in your life, no question about it. Yes, I want to say this prayer and show my humility in knowing that I cannot get rid of these myself, that I have to rely on finding a connection with a higher power to get rid of these. And I will not find that connection with a higher power simply by praying to that power. I will find that connection by doing what that higher power ultimately, if I can anthropomorphize, wants me to do, or from my point of view, going in the direction of the higher values that I have rather than in my own direction. Living my life dedicated to those ideals rather than living my life dedicated to my way. So I'm not going to spend more time in 6 and 7. I think it's done the same day or the day after. It's done right away because you can't waste time. But let's say you want to do it more deeply. Well, that's fine. And I've met people I've sponsored said, you know, I went too quickly to step 6 to 7. And I really have to consider it. I have no problem with that. But just no delays and no excuses for not going on. Don't use 6 and 7 as an excuse for not doing 8 and 9. Maybe that's the best way of putting it. Because a lot of people, oh, I'm not ready. Why? Because I don't want to go to that bank, you know, blank and say I'm sorry. You know, well, that's a very different issue. You know what? I'm not going to hand it out, but there's a sheet here called Step 4 Outline. It explains the Step 4 stuff that I've talked to you about. There's also a sheet which I'm going to ask you to pick up afterwards because we're running out of time. Step 8 and 9 sheet, it's a real simple sheet. It's not from the Big Book, it doesn't have any, I can't prove that it's not from the Big Book. It's something I put together that may help you. If it doesn't help you, that's no problem either. But just, it'll be up here. And I invite you to take all the other sheets. There are two other sheets, the Step 11 prayer sheet and the arch. You just take them as you go out, and whatever's left over we can deal with tomorrow. But the big book says, now listen to what the big book says, 76. Right after step 7, we've said this prayer. Oh, by the way, we ask God to remove only those defects of character which stand in the way of our usefulness to God and to our fellows. I have a lot of little defects of character, some of which I won't share in great detail anyway, some of which you'll never know. A few obsessions. I have some obsessions. I happen to know more than any human being should know about the life and works of Arturo Toscanini, the great classical conductor. He was an obsessive man. I'm an obsessive guy. There are a whole bunch of us who know too much about him. We obsess over him. I have literally cleared a room at a party by talking about him. Don't ask me about his recording engineer of 1947, because I could tell you about the placement of the microphone in Studio 8H and what the mistakes were made. Don't ask me. As a matter of fact, I should shut up about it. Anyway, I belong to a, what do they call it, listserv or mail list, an email kind of thing, where all of us who are obsessed with Toscanini talk. Now, I enjoy the byplay of this thing, and I spend maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day sort of reading through what people write about. There are some people who spend their lives on that list, who answer and yell, yell with capital letters, and who call each other names because they... I waste some time, but you know what? It sort of gives me a little bit of relief and lightness in my life. So it doesn't take away my usefulness to other people. It's sort of a rest that I take. On the other hand, if I became one of those people who spent 2 hours poring over those things, who worry and go to the score and look at the differences between the performance of January the 7th and January the 9th of 1935, of Death and Transfiguration, then I'm clearly harming my ability to be useful to others. I'm spending more time on Arturo Toscanini, who's dead, whose music still lives, and then my fellows whom I'm here to help. So I think it's interesting. Anyway, the big book says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So there is no value. We can't stop here. We have to go on. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. I'm going to give you a summary, because I can't read all this. Blaine said in a talk he gave that the next few pages discuss every possible amend that you could make. And I listened to that, and I said, that's baloney. There's six examples of direct amends, and there's one example of living amends, and that's it. How could it possibly cover every possible amend? Well, as I said, if I'm inspired by other parts of the book, if I think the other parts of the book is inspired, maybe this part is too. I'll give you the analysis. I don't have time to sort of show you exactly where it is. There are 3 direct amends. By the way, I owe amends and amends to all kinds of people. I used to say an amend as opposed to an amends. And I learned that although the word is relatively young, it's singular as well as plural. It's a word like people. It can be both singular and plural. Amends is the proper noun form, and it's not only plural. It feels very wrong to me to say that, but it is. So when people say, I owe an amends to that person, it used to drive me up a wall, because I'm a grammarian. I say, it's an amend. But no, they were right and I was wrong. So that's my singular amends. On that basis. Anyway, there are 3 kinds of direct amends. There's eyeball to eyeball, which takes the form of, I am sorry for what I have done, and I am, God willing, I am no longer the person who did that. I will do anything I can to make it up. I am sorry. There's an amends where that's not enough. You can say all that, but that's not enough. I have damaged you, I have harmed you, I've taken money from you, I've stolen from you, I've damaged something belonging to you. Well, it's not enough to say I'm sorry. What you have to do is make restitution. You have to, come up with the money. And then there are amends where you have gone beyond an individual and harmed maybe that person to society. You've gossiped about that person and harmed that person So the saying, I'm sorry I gossip about you and I'm not doing it again, isn't enough. You have to repair the reputation that you have. You may have wronged society, or you may have wronged your business. You may have stolen from one person, but in stealing from that person, you may have harmed a whole bunch of other people. You may have stolen and therefore gone contrary to society's norms and broken the law. And those are the amends you have to make there are public amends. They're beyond just, I'm sorry. They're beyond restitution. They are, in fact, amends that you owe to society as a whole, or a specialized part of society. The big book has three examples of the direct amends. First is, I am sorry for what I've done. Could I ask someone to get me a bit of water, please? The second amends, the restitution, you owe money, you're stolen, you pay it back. The third amends is, you owe money, you pay it back. The third amends is you may have committed a criminal offense and you should go to jail. Thank you.
Sure.
So those are the three different kinds of amends, the examples they give. They then, and they have a few general concepts about that. Page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. So again, that's a prayer. God, please give me the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences are. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. And the big book pauses and says, yeah, these are amends we have to make. But what if doing those amends would harm other people? Then you've got to weigh that. You have to think about, if doing those amends would harm other people, how can you make them? They then give three more examples, not in the same order, but three more examples. One of them on the restitution. The next one is on restitution, dealing with paying alimony. The next one is on reputation, the public need, a guy who gossiped another person, denied that he owed him any money. And the third one is eyeball to eyeball, do you tell your wife of your marital infidelities? Same, you know, would you do more harm than good in making these amends? And they talk about general principles, you ask guidance. If you would harm other people, you know, if the person who owes back alimony would take money away from the current family in order to pay the former family, can that person do that without discussing it with the current family? Because it wouldn't be fair to bankrupt the current family at the expense of the older family. And they suggest, well, so you have to work that out. The person who gossiped about the person and ruined his reputation had to balance the harm that he did to that person as against the harm he might do to his family and his business partners in ruining his own reputation. You know, if I committed a criminal offense and I was the sole support of my family, I have to weigh and deal with the issue of whether going to jail is worth harming my current family. I have to do that. I don't know what I would come up with, but I have to do that. And lastly, what good does it do to tell someone who doesn't know about harm you've done them? What good does it do? I mean, our OA 12 and 12 has this great example. It's either there or it's in the white daily meditation just for you. For today. Hi, Mom. I've hated you for 20 years, but I love you now. What good does it do to say that? What good does it do to say to someone, you know, 25 years ago when I was in a relationship with you, I should have left that relationship really early and told you that you needed psychiatric help. Instead, I stayed in that relationship, and you have continued to be as sick as you were back then. I'm very sorry. Really, you know? What good does it do to the guy I gossiped about to say to him, for about 4 years, I held you up to public ridicule, but you don't know it. You know, it's of no value. It would harm him more. what I have done, by the way, in relation to that person, is I'm a real stick in the mud. When people start talking about that person, he's very well known in my town, I will say, I used to gossip about him, but now I realize I was making fun of a problem he has. And I don't think it's funny to talk about him like that. I do that generally with all kinds of things. I mean, I've written down racism, and I've one of my dishonest aspects is I didn't call it down when it happened, in a loving, kind way to help people change, not in a calling down in an angry way. So those are the three direct amends. There are no others. Either you say you're sorry, you pay back, or you have to say you're sorry and pay the consequences in a more public way. What else could there be? And then there are the living amends. The big book discusses them. It says, it's not enough to say to people you live with, and I would say people you work with and people who are in you're in relationships with, friend relationships, to say to them, I'm really sorry. You have to live your life according to the principles. You can't just say you're sorry. As a matter of fact, if you've hurt them, they won't even believe you, generally speaking. So you have to live your life. You know, as people say, you may be the only copy of the big book anyone ever meets. And I think you have to live according to the principles of your deepest values. And they talk about that. And then there are amends you can't make. People who are dead, people who aren't available, and all that. I have about 10 minutes. I know I want about 3 minutes just before the end, but I'll just give you a few general concepts. I've heard people say in big book studies, I don't understand it, and it's not my experience. You don't have to believe you're sorry in order to say you're sorry. You just grit your teeth and go there and say you're sorry. It's the action of saying you're sorry that's important. I mean, I understand what's being said. Act as if, you know, that stuff. Well, first of all, I have difficulty understanding how, if you've worked the big book this way, if you've worked the steps this way, how you aren't sorry. How you haven't seen your defects of character and how you don't want to change. I mean, just beyond that. At any rate, I do believe it's the way in which you approach the person that's more significant. I think the big book says that. If you go there and you want to sweep off your side of the street, the big book promises that wonderful things will happen to you no matter how they treat you. They may kick you out of the office. They may reject how you, your whole apology. But you will feel great. And that's absolutely true because you've swept off your side of the street. Happened to me. I made an amends to a person who would not acknowledge his memory of it, even though I knew he remembered it, and who treated me like dirt for the next, well, treated me like dirt before that. He treated me like dirt afterwards. But I felt great. And I it was a person who had been like an older brother to me. And I continually was able to treat that person with love as an older brother, even though he still treated me like dirt. Because I cleaned out, I became his problem. He wasn't my problem anymore. I felt great. We ultimately reconciled because I continued to treat him with the love I owed a person who had been like a brother to me. living amends are really important. So what I've come down to is if your motives are right, the right answer comes. I don't rehearse my apologies. I ask for the humility to admit what I've done, and I ask for the right words. The big book promises us when we get to step 11 that our intuition will be at work and we'll come up with the right words. That's been my experience. If I really am sorry for what I've done, if I really am a person who, if I'm trying not to be the person who did what, the kind of person who did what I did, then it's going to come from my heart, and the right words will come. And more than that, even if they're not the right words, who cares what I say? The person will hear me. And if they don't hear me, that's their problem, not mine. Lots of stories of amends, lots of ways of doing amends. If you can't make the amends, you can think of, you know, a friend of mine walked out of a restaurant somewhere in a small little town in India because of the service and didn't pay. Didn't remember the restaurant, knew the town, found an OA meeting there, sent them some money. No, good. You give money to charity. You can't pay back because if you admitted to a criminal offense, you find a way of paying it back. find a way. You know, don't try to talk about the guy owed, what, $125,000 and paid it back $25 a month, I should say. Felt great, finally paid it off. I don't know if the mathematics works, but you know what I'm saying. You do what you can without harming other people. But my friends who were sexually molested, assaulted, victims of incest, I had three friends, and each one had a completely different kind of amends they made. One of them went to the police in order to stop that person from continuing to harm others. One of them announced at a family party that she had been a victim of incest by this particular uncle, and that she would not let her children get close to him unattended. Because it was her notion that it was important that he not continue to offend. Because he was digging his own grave, in a sense, and she wanted to protect others. A third said, he's 95 years old, he's dying, he's a lonely, bitter, sad, pathetic man, and there's nothing I can do to help him. And I'm not going to do anything. He's not a danger to others anymore. He's already done all the dangers he can, all the bad things he can do to himself. He has dug his own grave. I don't have any great answers. I do know one thing. Before doing anything drastic, I would share it with the person I did step five with, or I would share it with another person just to make sure I was not being either hard on myself or too easy on myself. The form that you can get there asks you to, in a column form, just to fill out, whom have I harmed? The next question is key. What harm have I done? Because unless you know the harm you've done, you can't know the kind of amends you have to make. If my harm was I did not tell the truth when the truth should be told, then clearly the amends to make is to tell the truth or to apologize for not having told the truth. Then the next thing is, will making that amend harm that person or other people? Well, that's where you start to filter it out and figure out, can I, that there, you know, there's a person out there to whom I would like to say, yes, I lied to you when I told you that you weren't embarrassing me, because you really were embarrassing me. But I was wrong because you shouldn't have been embarrassing me. That was my own problem. You know, when I didn't take you to that party and you said, you don't want to take me to the party because you're embarrassed to be with me, I said, no, I was lying to you. I really was embarrassed to take you to that party. But I'm really sorry, you're worth much more than the people at that party. I'm not going to say that, especially 30 or 40 years after. You know, hey, remember that party I didn't take you to? No, I'm not going to do that. I don't know what this person is like. But if I know where the person lives, and we didn't part on bad terms, if I ever go to where that person lives, I might email and say, if you ever want to have coffee, I'm going to be in town, have coffee, see where that person is at. And I might say, you know what, when I look back, I was an immature lout, and I don't think I treated you as well as you deserved. I'm sorry. I might say that. I'm absolute believer in the concept that if you really know the harm you've done, you'll come up with the right way of doing it. So, will I do any harm? And then there are those three columns, those famous columns. Am I ready to do it now? Am I ready to do it sometimes? Will I never do it? And that allows you to sort of put into place in the never do it column things that you can't imagine ever doing, going back to that person and saying, I am sorry, that no good, blah, blah, blah. And what you find is you do all the ones that you're ready to do. And then magically, the ones that you're ready to do sometime go into the now column, and the ones that you never will do go into the sometime column. Then you do the ones in the now column that used to be in the sometime column. And you do them, and magically, the ones that used to be in the never turn into the sometime, now go into the now. It's just a helpful form. I'm not suggesting anything more about it. There's so much more that can be said, but I'm going to stop there. What I want to do is two things. I want to talk about humility and tell a joke, which I think is a tough joke. This will see if you're not Jewish whether you have a Jewish sense of humor. Because the big book says on page 83, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. You know, people write letters to dead people. I have conversations with dead people. You know, I have conversations with my grandparents, which I made amends to them, and boy, I knew what they would say. We don't care. We love you. You know. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. So there are people if that guy I gossip about came up to me and say, hey, I heard that 20 years ago you gossiped about me and told stories about me, I would say, I'm sorry you found out, but you're absolutely right. And this is what I have done to make amends to you now. But I want to apologize. I didn't want to tell you because I thought you didn't know. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. There may be a valid reason for postponement. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. You know, Uriah Heep's, I'm very humble. I'm very humble. You know, we aren't like that. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Here's the story. It's Yom Kippur, or Yom Kippur, as some people pronounce it. And it's the holiest of holy days. Jews ask for atonement. They bow, they prostrate themselves before God because they are asking God's forgiveness. And in a small shtetl like Tevye, within a shtetl in Russia, very small synagogue, the people are saying the prayers. And the rabbi gets up, he says, God, before you, I am nothing, I'm nothing. And he falls flat in his face. I am nothing. I'm nothing. I'm going on for another 5-10 minutes. Okay. And then the richest man in town gets up. He says, God, before you, I am nothing. I'm nothing. He falls flat in his face. I'm nothing. I'm nothing. And then the town beggar gets up. He says, God, before you, I am nothing. I'm nothing. He falls flat in his face. I'm nothing. I'm nothing. And the rich man whispers to the rabbi, look who thinks he's nothing. Hey, you passed. You passed. Very good. Now, that's the kind of wrong humility we're talking about. The AA 12 and 12 is great on humility. Humility isn't servile or scraping. It's standing on our feet as one of God's creatures. It's being who we are and knowing that we are doing our best to live according to our deepest values. And once we do that, we don't bow before anyone, but at the same time, we're not above anyone. Last, I just want to, you know, we're all familiar with the promises that occur halfway through step 9. Okay, you know, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I'm going to start with that tomorrow, but I just want to remind you that the promises are there. Okay? Well, if you give me 5 minutes, I can probably do them. Can I go through them? Yeah, okay. If we're painstaking about the space of development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Halfway through step 9. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. Being able to look at my past, the things that used to paralyze me, and know that they are now in the past, and I have reconciled myself to the absolute fact that I cannot change the past, but I can only change how I feel about the past. It's an amazing experience. And it goes on. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale, or in many of our cases, how far up the scale we have gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. As I said, I mean, I have the gift of gab. Hey, it's not hard to have the gift of gab by being a lawyer, studying philosophy, studying English, and being a teacher. It's not that hard. To have what I have, to analyze text and all that. What I don't have are the kind of experiences I have heard from other members of this program who are able to say, I suffered this, I suffered that, this has happened to me, that has happened to me, and I don't eat over it anymore. I have recovered. Those are the people who have a message to give, and we heard you say, you don't mind my saying, to Don and Harlan, those are the people who can, they have a message that is overwhelming to me. And they have the right to say, as I do not have, do you want some cheese with your wine? Stop whining. Stop whining and either do the program or leave. I don't have that right because I haven't suffered the way friends of mine in this program have suffered. So their experience can benefit others far more than mine. I can tell wonderful stories. Well, I don't know how wonderful, I can tell stories, but I don't have the sadnesses that people have had. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. What a promise that by the past we can be useful to others and help others with our sadnesses. If you're religious or spiritual, if you believe in a more anthropomorphic God, a God who enters into this world, you have every right to believe that the bad things that have happened to you in the past were designed to help you become more useful in the present and in the future. You have every right to believe that. And I envy your certainty. I don't share that. I don't have that. From my point of view, it's simply that the experiences I've had in the past have at least allowed me to be more useful in the future and the present. I don't believe that they happen for a reason, but at least I believe the only use I can make out of them is to be useful to others, and I can use them to help others. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. So some of you do say it, some of you don't. They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, spiritual experience, sometimes slowly, spiritual awakening. They will always materialize if we work for them. Those aren't the promises that I came for in this program. I didn't come to OA to feel good about myself or to deal with my past or to figure out how I can be useful to others. The promises that I came for are found at the bottom of page 84, and they're the ones that are guaranteed by the end of step 9, even though they're found after the discussion of step 10. And I want to read these, and I want to end with them, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even our killer foods. I don't say even food, because I'll tell you, radishes are not things that I have problems with. You know, it's my killer foods I have problems with. It's my killer food ingredients. It's my killer eating behavior. So I like to say not just food. I like to say my killer foods, my trigger foods, my trigger eating behaviors. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Now, what is sanity? Being able to look at reality. I can't eat this. Other people can. I can't. We will seldom be interested in liquor and our killer foods. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. By indirection, find direction out. Quote from Hamlet. This whole notion by, you know, how I want to come to OA, I want to learn how not to eat. 5 minutes, is that okay? I want to learn how not to eat. And they say, well, go off in this direction. Deal with your past. Get rid of your defects of character. And you'll find automatically you're in that direction. Amazing. We will see that our whole attitude toward liquor or killer foods has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Tomorrow, I will talk about keeping in fit spiritual condition. Thank you very much.
So great hearing you in person again, Laurie. After I heard